Welcome to Living with Dying, a podcast where we're going to talk about the unspeakable, everything to do with death and dying, and how to live with it. We're all on the same journey towards the end, but we just never talk about it. We don't like to think of our own life ending, and we certainly don't like to contemplate losing our nearest and dearest. So we all join in this huge conspiracy, pretending it won't happen to us. And then, when it does, we're often ill-prepared. So we're saying, let's talk about death. Let's open up the subject, and by listening to other people's stories, glean some advice and tips on how best to approach death, how to deal with loss, and how to rebuild a life after. Well, today I'm delighted to be joined by Sam Hart, who I found on Twitter, which you're a very prolific podcaster, aren't you? And tweeter, actually, Sam. And your podcast now is called The Insight Podcast, which I really like because you do have so many insights. I know you ran your podcast initially for primary school teachers, but I was going to say I would recommend it to anyone, and I gather it is now geared for anyone because it's so full of interesting stuff. So many congratulations on that, and welcome today. And the reason I was attracted to talk to you was because you posted up before Christmas a list of 10 things that you like to do to kind of cheer yourself up. And I noted that you said being the only one in your own friendship group who was single and without children, you sometimes felt lonely. And this was a list of things you did to kind of get yourself through a day, wasn't it, really? And because I started my podcast initially with a view to helping people rebuild a life after the loss of a long relationship, so your list would have been probably very helpful for me then. But if you don't mind, we could go through them now. And you start off, number one is do something for somebody else.
Yeah, and when I kind of the first sentence after that, I think, is there's a reason why this is number one. And that's because, yeah, of course, when we're feeling low, when we're feeling lonely, it's easy to get caught up in our own heads, isn't it? And feeling sorry for ourselves, getting worked up about things, and just in that dark moment, which I can completely understand and relate to. But I think if one of the first kind of things that you think of to do is expand out, take a step back and think, who can I help actually? Like, I'm not feeling great at the moment, but if I flip that straight away and think, who can I help? And that could be a big gesture. It could be a charitable donation. It could be volunteering. It could be getting out and seeing someone that you know that might also be feeling the same way, whether they're lonely or whether they're going through a tough time as well. But it also could be very small things. I just try and think, oh, I'll just send a quick message to one of my friends and I'll say, love you, man. How's it going? Like, I've missed you. We haven't connected in a while. When are we going to meet up again? I'll send a message to someone in my family. Just, hi, how are you? Something like that. So I think if almost instantly we try and flip it around, and of course we need to be cautious there because there is times when we do need to focus on ourselves and we do need to think, oh, I'm going through something here. So I need to acknowledge and accept that. But if quite quickly you think, right, what can I do for other people? It's an instant vibe raiser, isn't it? It's an instant mood booster.
So is that what you would do soon after you woke up if you found yourself feeling down?
You know, it's pretty rare that I wake up not feeling great. It's more in the evenings. I don't know if you can relate to that, but I think it's more once, you know, I've gone through the day, I've ticked off the to-do list, and then it's like, ah, this is a time when maybe I'd be sharing the time with someone else. This is when I'd be having company. This is when we'd be in the kitchen cooking together, things like that. I think it's the evenings more that I struggle. So it would be then when I might be thinking, let's reach out to someone. Let's think about what I can do. Let's think about some future plan that might involve other people and might involve helping the community, something like that.
And that brings us on very neatly to your second number two, which is plan my day. Do you do that every day?
Pretty much. I mean, I work as a primary school teacher still for 4 days a week at the moment now, so Monday to Thursday. And I guess it's less essential for those days because I've got a pretty clear outline of the day, i.e. getting to school, powering through my school day, and then coming back, and then maybe I'll have the gym or cooking or whatever in the evenings. It's more for the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And of course, during the holidays as well, the half terms and summer holidays and things. But yeah, certainly on a Friday, it's one of the first things I do when I wake up in the morning. And I can be quite prescriptive about it. Like I will block out and I'll write out every time six till seven, this is what I'm going to do. 7 till 8, this is what I'm going to do. And I try and get a whole list out. By no means do I stick to it every single time. Sometimes plans go out the window, don't they? Sometimes things take a little longer. Sometimes they take less time and you fly through your to-do list. But definitely I find it so helpful to plan out my day and think. It helps with the whole flow of the day, doesn't it? That you're thinking, right, this, like for example, today I've recorded 2 podcasts and now I'm talking to you. So I planned out, well, record the 2. Between the 2, I know what I'm going to do to make sure I'm kind of like reset my energy levels and I'm ready for the next one. So a short little break, a bit of food, something like that. And then just before I got on with you, I went for a short 20-minute walk around the park that's just outside my house. And again, that was part of my plan because I know that will make me so much more fresh and present when I come to talk to you. Instead of, if I hadn't got that plan, I would have finished recording and then in the lead up to talking to you, I might have just sat on my phone and scrolled through Instagram, and then I maybe would have been a bit more frazzled when I talked to you than I am now, because I've had a bit of fresh air, certainly fresh at the moment.
So that was going to be my next question. What happens if you don't have a plan? Is it chaos?
It's not chaos, but I think I will give into temptation more easily. I will lay on the sofa for longer than I need to. I will, I don't know, I won't make the gym that I said I wanted to do that day. I won't have made time to read, and I won't do all the things that I know make me feel good. That, yeah, might take a bit of effort. It takes a bit of effort to get to the gym. It takes a bit of effort to open my book, and the first couple of pages, there's that bit of resistance, isn't it? Isn't there? But I know that I'll feel good after. So the plan is essential in reminding me of what's the type of person I want to be? Who do I want to be every day when I wake up? The type of person I want to be, the type of person that reads regularly, that connects with people, that exercises consistently, that eats healthy, that makes time to be still and quiet and to meditate. So the plan is there for that reason. And no, I wouldn't say it descends into chaos or anarchy or anything like that, but it just makes things more difficult, and maybe I'm not as productive as I'd like to be. And then I know that I'll get to the end of the day and kind of feel a little bit low.
So you feel more satisfied if you've achieved your plan, really?
Yeah, for sure. Like yesterday, for example, the last thing I wanted to do last night when I got home from work was to make a video to prepare for the other 2 podcast guests today, to write another post, I think I did, and a couple of other little bits. I just really didn't feel like it, but it was part of the plan. It was part of the plan that, like, for example, I got home and I had written in this case those things down, because I'm like, I know I need to get these things done. If I put it down on paper, give myself a time frame, then yeah, by 9 p.m. I was like, oh wow, I achieved so much in half an hour. That something that was looming over my head for a whole day, actually I've just, you know, knocked the ball out of the park, and now I feel great.
And then you can feel better about relaxing, can't you, if you've achieved something. You feel you've earned that period of rest afterwards.
Yeah, for sure. I think we need to be careful about feeling like we need to earn rest. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Like, we don't need to earn rest. We don't need to have worked really hard before we rest, because rest should just be part of our day. It should be scheduled in. It's just part of us being human. We need rest and to be able to switch off. But I completely see what you mean. Yeah, I enjoyed the hour watching Netflix much more because I knew I'd got things done.
So number 3 then is sit with my feelings, which is, again, you're very good at leading us through to the next heading, aren't you? you talked about building rest, and that's when you would sit with your feelings, I guess.
Yes, sit with my feelings. And I think this is perhaps one of the bigger realizations I've had in the last 5 years or so. Not always linked to feeling lonely or not always linked to single life, but just in terms of my mental well-being and my approach to the day, my approach to life is, yeah, being able to sit with the feelings, being able to recognize that a thought is just a thought. It's not me. It's not my identity. I don't have to run away with these things. If a feeling of loneliness comes up, if a feeling that I really miss a particular person because of this relationship that ended, then that's telling me something, isn't it? It's telling me a couple of things. It's telling me that, you know, I might be ready to find a new relationship. It might be telling me that this was a really good part of my life. This was something really positive, and I learned a lot from this person, and I'll forever be grateful to that person. So to not suppress the feeling, that's what I mean. That we, I think in the past, maybe a feeling of loneliness or sadness or stress or anxiety, that I might have tried to squash that down very quickly and distract myself. But now I'm trying to learn to sit with the feeling, recognize it, understand it, give it a scale from 1 to 10, understand if other people around me might be feeling the same way as well. And then also give me some impetus to do something about that feeling. If I'm feeling anxious, well, I know what I need to do. I can't just sit there thinking about how anxious I am or how stressed I am. That's not going to help me. I can't, you know, it's another popular podcaster, Rich Roll. He talks about you can't think yourself out of low mood or low energy. You can't just sit there and let your mind keep churning on it and expect to all of a sudden the light bulb go off and, oh, I don't feel like that anymore. No, it's like we need to do something about it. So sit with the feeling, accept it, but then recognize, well, what can I do about it?
What kind of things would you then do about it?
A big one for me is exercise. So whether that's running, yoga, going to the gym, boot camps, this kind of thing. Those are approaches that I like. Reading, maybe writing sometimes, less often now. I'd like to get back into that habit. Like we said before about connecting with people, that's another good one. Just a simple WhatsApp message, just connecting with someone on social media, commenting on their posts. Little things like that can kind of help you get into the rut, out of a rut, sorry. Cooking as well. Cooking's a big one for me.
So you seem to be saying, I'm getting a bit of a mixed message here. Mm. Stay with the feeling, but at the same time, do something about it rather than thinking about it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. So as in, the feeling will come up. Don't just squash it and try and ignore it and distract yourself with Instagram or with TikTok or with YouTube. Accept it. But then think, well, what is the proactive approach that you can take to this feeling? And yeah, I see what you're saying, because actually that might mean sitting with the feeling for a long time. It might mean that actually I am going to let myself feel a little bit low for an hour and not then just go straight to the gym. Like that's not exactly what I mean. We're not just going to recognize the thought and get straight out there and, I don't know, burn it off by going for a run or something. You might just let it sit with you and let it flow through you. And maybe that means some emotions come up. Maybe that means you have a little cry, whatever it is. It's like, yeah, accepting that feeling is there and allowing it to pass, to run its course, or maybe thinking, well, there is something I can do about it. And there's a way that I can, get myself out of that. Because, yeah, we don't want to just wallow in those negative feelings for a whole day, a whole weekend, whatever it is. So it's a fine balance, isn't it? And I've by no means found that balance, and I'm not an expert, but it's playing with that balance between sitting with the feelings, but also recognizing it and then wanting to do something about it.
I thought a lot about that when I first lost my husband, because I didn't initially spend enough time, I don't think, sitting with the feelings, right, and letting them come in, because you kind of think you've got to get on with life and you've got to be busy and you can have distractions, but the feeling then doesn't ever go away. So I used to build in time for sitting and being sad.
Oh, really?
Because I find it helpful. I didn't want not to be sad. You know, I'd lost my partner in 47 years. I didn't want to dismiss those feelings. So, yeah, I did sit with them, like you described, and built in time to do that, really, because otherwise you just carry on as if everything's normal, and it's not normal.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So when you say you built in time, was it like a plan for your day? Was it the same kind of thing, a timetable? And
yeah, I tried to make sure I wasn't so crammed up with other things that I didn't have that time, because I was missing it. So, I mean, I'm talking about kind of like 4 or 5 months after he died when I realised I hadn't paid enough attention to that sadness. And it felt like a good thing to do. But I guess, like, probably got to the stage now where I know what things to do to lift myself out of it. And I guess it's different for all of us, isn't it? We're all going to do it in a different way, a different time scale.
Exactly, yeah. I was about to say, in a different time scale as well, yeah.
So let's go on to your next one, which is an interesting one, this one. I'm dying to hear you explain this one. Become my best friend.
Yeah, so I suppose that is linked to the previous one as well, isn't it? That you are having that ability to sit with yourself, listen to your thoughts, recognize your thoughts, understand your thoughts, and be okay with that. So as in, we all have that conversation in our head, don't we? We're all kind of like talking, asking questions of ourselves and answering questions of ourselves, and just understanding that that's normal and that's okay, and allow that conversation to come up and make sure it's a friendly one. What I also mean by that is perhaps not needing anyone else to be there, other people to feel good all the time, as in I don't want to rely on other people to pick my mood up, that like I've got my own back and I know what to do if I'm feeling lonely, if I'm feeling sad, if I'm feeling a bit anxious, whatever it is, that I can have that conversation in my own head. I can become my best friend and I know what I need to do and I don't need to rely on other people. Of course, again, that's a balance, isn't it? Because of course we need other people, and of course we need to connect with others, and of course we need to share our feelings. But it also means like that I don't need to outsource my happiness to someone else, and I can sit on my own and be perfectly comfortable with that. And I'm not thinking, well, as soon as one relationship has ended, I need to jump straight to the next one within a month, because I need to fill that void of I need company all the time, and I need someone to go on holiday with, and I need someone to eat dinner with, I need someone to go traveling with, whatever it is. Like, no, I am my own best friend. I am enough. I'm good company for myself. So I don't need to outsource it to anyone else. I hope that makes sense.
Now we get on to number 5, which is get on social media. This one's intriguing too.
Yeah, and I think I open that with that I've got a bit of a love-hate relationship with social media, because there are many aspects of it that I absolutely love. You know, I wouldn't be talking to you without social media. I wouldn't have had incredible guests on my podcast without social media. There's new friends that I've made because of social media. I learn so much through social media, perhaps more than I do through reading books, because you know it's just there and I'm reading the latest study on this and finding out this psychologist's perspective, and so that's all fantastic. And again, social media is that it can provide that social group that we were just talking about. You know, if you are particularly interested in reading, or you want to write more, you're an author, you want to join a group that's, you know, a group of authors and set up that accountability. If you want to find people that are interested in a particular board game, whatever it is, social media gives you all of those things, doesn't it? But then on the other side of it is that it can be a bit of a drain. It can be hard when you are comparing yourself with other people. Of course, if you're feeling lonely and you're checking Instagram and seeing the latest friend has got engaged, and someone's had a baby and they're getting married, and look at that beautiful new girlfriend that that person's got, and that kind of thing. You know, the comparisons come up, don't they? But I think on the whole, that social media is a positive thing. And so it comes there because it's kind of like if I've planned my day and I've done a couple of other things, I've sat with my feelings, but then I'm still feeling a bit lonely, well, I can just jump onto Twitter. I can jump onto Instagram. And I can connect with someone. I'll send a message to someone that's maybe a friend that I've made through social media. Hi, how are you? I'll post on social media and then I get some like interaction with people, people commenting, people responding to a question, someone saying that that was really useful. It's like, oh, wow. You know, I was feeling a bit isolated and lonely, but look at all these people that are connecting with me and appreciating something that I've put out or answering a question. Or maybe I comment on something that they've done and give them a bit of praise for some achievement that they've done. They've ran their first 5K, they've completed a half marathon, I don't know, whatever it is. And so it is that instant connection, isn't it? It's at the end of our hand, we can just grab a phone and we can be really, really quickly connected with other people around the world, which is pretty cool.
It is, but it's interesting that you've got it at number 5 and you've got get in touch at number 7. So we're going to get onto that in a minute, but you've kind of put it above real life contact, haven't you?
I have. I'm trying to think back to when I wrote this. Was that intentional? Maybe I need to reorder. Maybe you've highlighted a flaw in the order. And I might swap 5 and 7. And it's a good idea because, you know, I wrote that tweet I wrote a year and a half ago now. It was when I was at my best friend's wedding in Slovenia. And so it's like, it's a real, it goes to show, I think it's like, it's a good context to put the tweet in because I was out on holiday with a group of friends celebrating the marriage of two of my favorite people in the world, which was amazing. I had an incredible time and it was so lovely to be invited, to be involved. It was an incredible event. It was beautiful. But of course, those feelings of loneliness came up, didn't they? You know, everyone goes to their hotel room with their partner and I go back to the hotel room on my own. And of course, that's when those feelings come up. And so that's when the tweet came about. It was such a long time ago that I wrote the tweet. And then maybe I haven't, maybe it needs some addressing and I could reorder things and edit things.
I don't want to make you make changes. No, that's not my intention.
No, it's absolutely fine. That's what we're here for.
Let's go on to number 6 then, which is get out in nature. Well, you've kind of talked about that, haven't you, along the way?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think this could be in a list for lots of things, couldn't it? It could be in a list for 10 things to do if you're not sleeping well, 10 things to do if you need to boost your creativity, 10 things to do if you're feeling anxious. Getting out in nature is just, it's vital. And we need to, because of the environment that we're in at the moment, you know, waking up, jumping in a car, driving to work, spending all day indoors, getting the car back home, then sitting on the sofa for the rest of the day. It's like, that's the expectations of us at the moment. That's an environment that's been created for us. And we're going to have to be the ones to push back against us, because I think the disconnect from nature, not I think, this is clear from research and from the experts, that the disconnect from nature is perhaps at the root cause of almost everything that is troubling us at the moment. Poor sleep, you know, not being able to regulate our emotions, not feeling like, I don't know, that we need to look after the environment, that we need to look after our planet because we're just not connected to it. I think there's some studies that show that people that are out in nature more feel more of a responsibility to take care of the environment. So yeah, it's that disconnect that we need to readdress. So we've got to be really conscious about getting out in nature. And so, yeah, it links to loneliness as well. That if I'm feeling a little bit lonely, and again, if I'm focusing on how I feel and I'm looking inward and like, oh, poor me, how I'm feeling. But then if you walk out into nature and, you know, often I go down to some hills near Birmingham, they're called the Malvern Hills. So I'll drive down there, try and get up there for the sunrise. And you've got a view out towards Wales, but also in the opposite direction as well. And it's like everything just kind of feels right in the world again, doesn't it? And you gain a bit of perspective. People that are talking about kind of our visual system and how important it is to be able to look out onto the horizon and have like that really wide field of view, because so often we're staring at computer screen, phone screen, other screen, book. So we're just always looking at this thing that's only 6 to 12 inches from our face instead of opening out. And that's, I think, when we, you know, when we can feel calmer, when we can feel more connected and just feel more human.
So The next one is get in touch. So we're back now to what we were talking about before.
Yes, yeah. Clearly, yeah, need to reorder it, don't I? Definitely. Those two should be next to each other. Social media and get in touch. But yeah, get in touch. And so this is one, like, it's an important reminder for myself, because I could get kind of trapped in my head of thinking, like, everyone is busy. You know, I'm feeling lonely, but I can't reach out to people because they've got family, they've got their young kids, they've got to take care of, they're at work. Everyone's busy doing their own thing. Like, I don't want to bother other people. And this is why it's such an important reminder, because it's just so often that's not the case, is it? You know, people are very busy, but if they're one of your close friends or if they're in your family and you send them a message saying, I'm not feeling great today, I'm feeling a little bit lonely, I know that I've got, how many people? 20, 30 people, probably, mixture of friends and family, maybe more, that if I said that, I know that no matter how busy they were, they would be picking up the phone straight away and saying, Sam, how are you? You okay? Like, I can come round. And that's a privilege, isn't it? And I completely understand that for many people, that's not the case. In fact, I think there's been research around that there's a decreasing number of people, and it might even be in particular men, that could name even just one person that they could phone in the middle of the night and say, like, I'm in trouble, can you come and help me? Which is really, it's shocking, isn't it? It's really scary. So I definitely feel very lucky that I've got a huge number of people that I know would respond to a WhatsApp message or a phone call. And so it's just that, yeah, it's just that reminder. Don't worry about bothering people. People want to be there for you. People want to be kind. People want to be supportive. And if they're able to, they will help and they'll connect and they'll say, right, let's meet up for a coffee. Let's go for a run tomorrow morning. But like I say in the tweet, if they can't do that, even if they just say, well, I've got 5 minutes, I'm just driving back from work, do you want to give us a call? And even just a 5 minute phone call, I can just, like, it can feel a bit of the pressure release and just go, ah, yeah, there's someone there that will always be there for me. They've just listened to me have a bit of a moan and now I feel better. And it only took a 5 minute phone call. So I think it's one of the, yeah, perhaps one of the more important ones. Just don't hesitate to reach out to people. There's perhaps too many people that are worried about reaching out to people, worried about seeking help, worried about getting the support, worried about looking weak, maybe worried about the stigma around voicing the fact that I'm feeling lonely today, I'm feeling anxious today, I've got this thing coming up and I'm really, really worried about it. You know, how many people maybe would have been saved quite literally if they'd have felt more confident and comfortable with having someone just to reach out to? So we all need to remember that. And we also need to be the people that make sure everyone around us knows that they can reach out to us as well. Like, I hope all of those 30 people know that they could also do the same with me, that they could phone me, that they could WhatsApp me, and whatever I'm doing, I'll drop it. And that they can talk to me about absolutely anything, however they're feeling. There's nothing that would shock me. There's nothing that would surprise me. And there's probably nothing that they could tell me that I haven't gone through myself. So it's that responsibility. We've got a responsibility to reach out, and we've got a responsibility to be the person that people can reach out to as well.
And most people would, I'm sure, rather be reached out to than not. They wouldn't want their friends to have thought or to have hesitated, would they? They'd wanted their friends to be able to pick up the phone to them.
Exactly. It's like that old saying about, you know, treat yourself like, I'm going to mess this up now. What am I trying to say? Like, think of yourself in the other person's shoes. Like, if I told my friend that I didn't want to reach out for them because I was worried about bothering them, like, my friend will be thinking, like, if I was on the other end, like, there's no way that I would be thinking that. Like, yeah, you've always got to reach out. And also, like you said, if I went through a period of, say, a week of feeling lonely or a week of feeling anxious or worry or whatever, and then I told my friend after a week, they'd be like, why didn't you get in touch sooner? Like, I can't believe this. Like, how dare you, basically? How dare you not get in touch with me? Like, we're here. We want to support you. Don't let that happen again. Make sure you tell me straight away.
And then the next one is exercise. Because we're talking about getting out in the fresh air, I suppose we have talked about exercise, but it doesn't have to be in the fresh air, does it?
No, it doesn't. Like, I go to the gym a couple of times a week, two or three, maybe four times a week. So no, it doesn't have to be outdoors. It can be at home as well. It can be a quick yoga session. It can be a quick body weight session, squats, push-ups, lunges, that kind of thing. Everyone knows the mood boosting benefits of exercise. It's just sometimes we lack the motivation, don't we? And sometimes when we're feeling particularly low, then it's one of the last things that we want to do. But we know how helpful it can be. And so I think, again, it's on the list because it's a reminder. Like, keep it front and center, like bring it to the forefront and think like, yeah, I really don't feel like doing this. But you always feel better after a little exercise session, don't you? As short as, even if it's just 5 minutes, whatever it is. So I'd say, yeah, just keep the body, get the body moving, do whatever you enjoy, dancing, yoga, hiking with friends, whatever it is, get the body moving. And there's little kind of tips around that, you know, get your workout gear out the night before so it's there ready. Little things like this where you can kind of like reduce some of that friction instead of thinking, oh, you wake up the next morning and oh, I can't be bothered. But if the workout gear's there and your bag's made and your breakfast is already done, it's like, oh, well, it's all there. So I might as well just get on with it.
That's a good tip. I'll remember that one.
Good.
Mindfulness next. So again, all these things are actually kind of interacting with each other, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point. And we can double, triple, 10x the benefits if we combine these things. And that's completely unscientific. But what I mean is, if you're exercising in nature, it's just that much better than in the gym, isn't it? If you are connecting with people at the same time as learning, it's that much better. So yeah, these combinations of things are brilliant. And mindfulness, yeah, that could be connected to nature. It could be connected to moving your body, for example, if you're doing yoga or Pilates or something. But it's just that awareness of being in the present moment, accepting where you are, noticing where you are, the colors, the sounds, the smells, all of this stuff. Being present, yeah, that is another thing that has been a bit of a game changer for me, you know, not just working on the physical side, but also the mental side, and realizing that if I carve out spaces in my day to be more mindful, and that could be a specific practice like meditation, which we're going to come on to, it could be that, but it also could be going out for a walk and not having headphones on, not taking my phone, not being distracted, but just noticing where I am. This is what it's all about. And then there's eating, there's drinking, like enjoying my coffee, like doing that, but without having to be distracted at the same time. Do one thing at a time. There's another tweet I share, which is mindfulness is when you drink, just drink. When you walk. When you eat, just eat. Like, just do one thing at a time. And that's the way to feel calmer, to reduce stress, to feel more connected, to feel more yourself. And like, you're not just on that treadmill of just go, 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 go. It's like you're pausing. And so the other part that I say in the tweet is that when you're alone, that's the perfect time to practice mindfulness because you are on your own. So you can be really engrossed in your meal that you've cooked and taking your time eating. If you're having a coffee alone, you can really take your time, smell it, sip it, savor it, all that good stuff that can help. It makes me think of when I go to the cafe, like on a Sunday morning, I'll go for a run into town and I'll have a coffee when I finish my run and read my book. But the first coffee I just have in front of me and I just drink it without doing anything else. And it always feels really awkward. I don't know. Do you ever get this when you go to a cafe on your own? And if you just have a coffee and you're not on your phone or reading a book, you're kind of worried like, oh, people are going to be looking at me thinking I'm a weirdo. And like, you've got to stop and think, I'm in a cafe, like that's what it's for. It's for enjoying a coffee.
Phones, wasn't it? We never had anything to look at before we had phones. We had to sit on our own.
Exactly. And we've lost that, and we need to go back to it and just be okay with just enjoying a coffee in a cafe and really try and fight against that feeling of embarrassment, like, oh, people are going to look at me and think, what a weirdo, because they're just thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about you. Don't worry. And you can just sit and enjoy that coffee. And it tastes better when you do.
I think of you from now on because I'm terrible. I often, because I usually have lunch on my own here, yeah. I usually have the radio on and I'm usually reading something at the same time. So I'm multitasking and I'm probably not paying any attention to my food. So I will think of you from now on, Sam, while I eat my salad. And
oh, well, I'm not a saint. Trust me. I'm not a saint. There's plenty of times when I'm eating dinner in front of Netflix and doing something else. But I think even just occasionally, once a week, one meal a week, where you just kind of remind yourself, catch yourself and think, oh, I'm just going to slow down. I think that can help and then we can build on. But I completely understand and I do the same.
So let's get on to meditate now. Then tell me about that.
Yeah, and it's last. Maybe that is more intentional. And I think I say in the tweet, don't I? Like, it's last for a, not for, I don't think I say it's last for a reason, but I do say it's kind of a word that people can resist. And you might hear meditation and you picture someone cross-legged under a tree and in their robes and things like that and think, well, that's not for me. I haven't got time for that. How is that going to help me if I'm feeling low, lonely, anxious, whatever? But meditation has been probably the most impactful thing that I've introduced to my life. The change in me, perhaps in the last 5-10 years, when I started meditating more regularly, it might not be something that's really obvious outwardly to other people, but in terms of my mind and the things that are going on, it's completely different. You know, I spent my early 20s, mid 20s, getting caught up in my head, going over anxious thoughts, always worrying, picturing worst case scenarios, all this stuff that many, many people suffer with all the time, that voice in the head. And I'm not saying that's gone. I'm not saying I never feel anxious. I'm not saying I never feel angry or jealous or any of those things. But meditation has helped me slow down and pause. It's helped me react more positively in situations. For example, I might jump in my car now and go to the shops. And in the past, if someone had cut in front of me and then beeped and then maybe sworn or something like that, I know that my heart would have then started racing and I've been really worked up and that feeling probably would have stayed with me for another hour, 2 hours. But it's like, I think meditation is the one thing that's enabled me to like separate the thoughts, slow down, not be so quick to react, to see them doing that. And yeah, you can kind of still get that in adrenaline rush and want to react, but you just pause and go, ah, right, what's the best thing to do here? Isn't it? It's linked to the becoming my best friend. It's linked to the sitting with my feelings. But if you're making time to meditate and learning to sit with your thoughts, recognize thoughts, let go of thoughts when they arise, and just try and be there and focused and present, it can just be so, so beneficial for you. And if you're asking yourself the question, like, who am I? Who do I want to be? Like, I'm feeling lonely now. What's going to happen though? How am I going to move forward now? What's the type of person I want to be in this situation? What values do I have? And have I enacted those values today? Am I going to enact those values tomorrow? How can we do that if we don't just sit down and pause and think about it? Because otherwise we'll just keep on going, won't we? We'll keep feeling the same. We'll keep feeling worked up and just plodding on through life when we need to sometimes pause. Well, every day we need to pause and we need to think, who am I? What do I want to do in this situation? What's the type of person I want to become? So I think it's valuable. I really do. And I think that people should try it, even if they think it's not for them. And maybe even if they think, well, when I sit down and try and pause even just for 30 seconds, like the mind is just racing and you think, well, how is this ever going to work? Because this is really uncomfortable. That's how everyone feels. Everyone feels like that when they first start meditating, and that's okay. The point is that you recognize, oh, all these thoughts are racing in my head, but then you go back to the breath and you breathe. You think about where you are. Maybe you're following like a guided meditation and that's helping you bring yourself back to the present moment. So I just encourage people to give it a go and to stick with it.
That's all very useful and interesting. Before you go, Sam, I want to ask you a couple more questions, if I may, because we've come to the end of your list. But I also noticed that you said you're a seasoned lone traveller, seasoned lone cafe goer and seasoned lone diner. Now, we've talked a bit about going to a cafe and sitting feeling uncomfortable without doing anything. But can you just tell me a bit more? What kind of traveling do you do on your own? And tell me more about how you go out to dinner, for instance, on your own, because I find that hard.
That is hard, yeah. And I the dinner thing, I guess I mean more just at home because I live on my own. And so, yeah, of course, more often than not, most times I'm eating on my own. But I completely understand that going out for dinner, I think I would struggle. I don't even think I would do it in my local area. I don't think I'd go to a restaurant on my own for fear of what people think, which is ridiculous, isn't it? But if I was in another country, absolutely fine with it. And actually relish it and absolutely love it. You know, I was in Italy over the summer. I went to Pisa and Florence. And of course, I had to sample all the different pizzas. And then in terms of traveling, yeah, I've been to quite a few places on my own. Yeah, I've been to Italy, Spain. I've been to Scandinavia. So I've been to Sweden recently. I went to Stockholm to do a race there. I just recommend it. I think it's great. And like we were talking about planning our days and when sometimes we have to share plans with other people. Well, when I went to Florence, I chose exactly which restaurant I want to go to and exactly what museum and exactly what cafe. There was no debating. There was no worrying about whether we should go here or there. It's like, I just decided it didn't depend on anyone else.
But you don't find you have lonely moments because you're reminded of the fact that you're on your own?
I definitely do. I definitely do. And it's like we said before about when I wrote the tweet at the wedding, and also just the day-to-day experience and of going through the week, where most of the time I feel connected, I feel busy, I feel absolutely great. But of course, there are moments when I feel lonely and that pang of, oh, I wish I had someone to share this with. And so, for example, in Italy, I was there for a good 5 days. And yeah, of course, there were numerous, numerous times where I was thinking, oh, it would be so great to share this with someone. I wish I was walking to this place hand in hand with a partner. I wish I could talk to someone else about this piece of artwork, and maybe they could also say that they don't understand what it means either, because I'm a bit clueless when it comes to art. And going out to a restaurant, of course, you think, oh, like, it's so lovely to be sharing that experience with someone. But it passes. Like, you know, I accept it and I don't get too worked up by that feeling. I just understand it. I try and kind of think about how grateful I am to be in that place, that what a privilege it is to be able to get on a plane and fly to this country and to be able to afford to eat out in a restaurant and explore these places. But at the same time, yeah, it's very real, isn't it? Where you think, oh, I wish I could share this with someone. And that's not something to like ignore. But I just try and look at it as a positive thing. Like, someone will come into my life and I will be sharing that these experiences with someone.
I've loved talking to you, Sam. Thank you so much for sharing all this with us. It's really useful. I'm sure it'll help people. It's certainly given me pause for thought. And one thing I would add about travel is that it's probably nicer to be lonely in Italy, isn't it, than lonely at home?
Maybe. Yeah, well, the weather was better, the food was better, the coffee was better. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you ever so much. I'm really, really grateful. I love talking to you.
We'll be having more chats in future episodes about everything to do with death and dying, such as how to prepare for it, what it's really like when someone dies, how to talk about it, what kind of plans to make, how different cultures and faiths approach dying and bereavement, lots more around grief and loss, how to support others in their sadness, and my personal hobby horse, how to rebuild a life, a good life, after the loss of someone special. If you'd like to join us to talk about the death of someone near to you, if this episode has resonated with you and you have a story to share, or if you've been affected by some of the issues raised, please do get in touch at hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.